Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Welcome to another episode of American Warrior Radio. Sailors tend to be a superstitious bunch, perhaps on par with baseball players. I worked with both. An old seafarer's tradition is that having women on board brings bad luck. As the tale goes, women would distract the sailors, causing them to neglect good, disciplined work. This, in turn, would anger the sea gods and cause them to take revenge on the ship. Oddly enough, having a bare-chested woman on board was considered good luck because she would shame nature into behaving itself, so much for the distraction theory. That partially explains why you see so many historic sailing ships with a female figure mounted on the prow. We have come a long way since then. Maybe. Superstitions die hard. Our guest today served aboard U.S. vessels in this century, and, well, we'll have her tell the rest of that story for you. She's a graduate of the U.S. Coast Guard Academy and holds a master's degree from Harvard University. She's one of the first female officers to serve aboard two Coast Guard cutters with all-male crews. She's also an award-winning author of five books. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Captain Martha LaGuardia Cotite.
Hi, Ben. Thank you. I'm excited to be here, and I appreciate your invitation.
Well, I saw your name come across one of my speakers' boards, and I thought, wow, what a great guest to have on. So, Martha, very much looking forward to having this talk. And I'll also share, in the 7 years of doing this show, Martha, you're only the second Coastie I've ever had on the show, which is much to my chagrin. The first was Andy Fitzgerald, who was a crew member of what was considered one of the greatest small boat rescues in Coast Guard history. You've probably heard his name.
Yes. Oh, what a phenomenal American and hero. Wow. That's a tough act to follow up.
You can do it. Let's introduce us a little bit, because really the Coast Guard, I believe, Martha, is the least recognized branch of service. And your path to the Coast Guard was sort of an interesting one that really is a foundational part of the story of how you got to where you are now. So tell us that story. Why the Coast Guard?
That's a great question, and first, I got to tell you, your intro was cracking me up in terms of, I learned something new about the history and angering the sea gods, and I can certainly relate to being one of the first women on ships with all-male crews and being viewed as bad luck. So, yeah, it's definitely true, the superstition did exist, but that's not why I joined the Coast Guard. I was a high school senior, and I had a life-changing tragedy happen in my family where I lost an older brother to suicide. So I immediately recognized how fragile and short life can be. And I immediately, well, not immediately, but through a process of that awareness, coming to that awareness, recognized that I wanted to not be a selfish teenager and just focus on material things, as many of us do when we're young and not aware of life's meaning, and wanted to live a life that made a difference, and if in some way I could save lives. And couple that with the fact that my father couldn't pay for our college education, and I was in a small fishing town, which was truly just a fishing town when I was there. Today it's a destination. It's in Northwest Florida. And knowing that I wanted to leave the fishing village and see the world and get a great college education and live a life that made a difference, and if in some way I could save lives, all of this packaged together enabled me to meet the heart of the Coast Guard at Coast Guard Station Destin, which is in Destin, Florida. And what I found there was some amazing group of people who had heart, who had courage, who wanted to make a difference, not only with the Coast Guard missions like saving lives, protecting the environment, but also worked well as a team. And it was a culture of empowerment. And all the jobs were open to women. There were no restrictions based on gender. So this immediately was attractive to me and felt empowering. And ultimately, the college education part, I was blessed enough to be given a nomination, or not a nomination as you have to get for the other service academies, but get an appointment to go to the Coast Guard Academy, which is in New London, Connecticut.
Now, Martha, let me interrupt there, because that's a very important point, and I think one of the distinctions, the Coast Guard was, I believe, it wasn't a DOD branch. It was under the Department of Transportation, and then it was transferred over to Homeland Security after 9/11. But Really, were they one of the first or the first branch to really open up all disciplines, regardless of gender?
Of the five service academies and services, military services for the United States, yes, the Coast Guard has been a trendsetter and a pace setter, and in a lot of ways, and even today, with a lot of different policies, they are setting the pace for the other services. And you may recall, it was just a handful of years ago where Department of Defense lifted the ban on women serving in combat fields, even though they were on the front lines doing other types of jobs. So it's been a long time that the Coast Guard has already opened all its doors and all its missions. You just have to qualify. And to do that, you've got to work hard, just like everybody else. And there's no expectation of the standards being lowered based on gender.
Well, and I tell you, Martha, the reason I used that intro was because of your practical experience. And it's hard for people who don't follow the military like I do to, you know, we've come a long ways. But in so many ways, we haven't. And I want to talk more about that because you've got a terrific book that talks about that as well, Martha. But, you know, I joke about the sailors and the superstitions, but you're assigned to your very first, I think it was a cutter, and yet there were crew members who still thought that you were bad luck. And we're talking, what, 1970s, 1980s?
Yes, I'm not that old, but...
Okay, sorry.
No worries.
So it was last year, yeah.
Don't we wish, right? We could get that time back. It was 1989, and my roommate and I were the first women to be assigned to a Coast Guard cutter sailing the Pacific, and there was a crew of 65 men, and there were quite a handful of folks that thought we were bad luck. And, you know, I understand if I look at it from their perspective, they've never sailed with women before, so it's different, it's change, and how do you adapt to that? And thankfully, there were a group of people who, even to this day, I'm friends with, who have been mentors and supporters along the way, and who believe that, yeah, we're just like anyone else. Our gender does not matter. And so we were able to qualify and serve in a profession that we chose. And basically, that's one thing I would hope people would recognize, is that women wanting to do these jobs that haven't been open to them before are always looking at it as a profession and a career, just like anyone else.
You know, it's and I want to emphasize that point because we still have a long ways to go, I believe, on behalf of women in all employment sectors, but in the military in particular. I had a jet girl who was on the show. She was, I think, if not the first, one of the first women, she's a Marine, to drop bombs on ISIS. And she tells this heartbreaking story of when she goes to her very first gathering of her squadron. It was at her commander's home. And here's the crew, the squadron mates and the wives. And, of course, the females all gather in the kitchen. They assume that she was, you know, who are you married to? Who are you dating? And when she finally told them that, no, she was a member of the squadron, she was going to deploy with these men on an aircraft carrier, literally the wives froze her out. Period. End of discussion. And that just breaks my heart.
I had that same experience with my first ship where, and actually it was funny, I was engaged to a classmate from the academy. He was on a different ship in the same port. So I wanted to join the Officers' Wives Club, as it was called back then. I think now it's the Officers' Spouses Club. So I was an officer, and I was, you know, engaged and then ultimately married. So I was an officer, a wife, and an officer's wife. I thought, oh, okay, I meet all the requirements, I can join. But I was also frozen out. And I think from women to women, we need to be definitely more supportive of each other, even if we don't understand or don't choose to serve in the profession that we choose to serve in, the U.S. military. I think we could still respect each other and treat each other as people, whether our gender doesn't matter, our age doesn't matter, our cultures don't matter. It's all about how do we empower each other so that we're all gaining from the wisdom and the opportunity that we present for each other.
And I tell you, we're going to have to take a break here. But I want to leave our listeners with a quote, because I want to touch on this, and then I really want to come back to one of your first books, Martha, because it really speaks to the true mission of the Coast Guard. In 1943, Mary Halloran commanded the 1st WAC Battalion to go overseas. She has been quoted as saying, "A prime objection to integrating women into regular service, which we were told was discussed in closed sessions, was that if women were in the regular military, men would have trouble taking orders from women. Heaven forbid." Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Martha LaGuardia Cotite, Captain Martha LaGuardia Cotite. She's got a great website. You can find her books and a little bit, some teasers of her speaking. You can find that at MarthaCotite.com, K-O-T-I-T-E.com. We'll be right back. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Captain Martha LaGuardia Cotite. She's, I think, Martha, 29 years, active duty Coast Guard.
Active duty, it was total of 29 years before I retired, not accounting the 4 years at the academy, but I was 10 years active and the rest was reserve part-time.
Okay. Folks, you can find out more, visit MarthaCotite.com, K-O-T-I-T-E.com. She's got some great books, some great little videos. You can find out more about her and her speaking. Martha, I want to, before we get into those, I want to talk a little bit more about the Coast Guard, because I feel very strongly about educating folks. I found some data. It was on the interweb, so who knows if it's true. But you were a former public affairs officer. So on an average day, the Coast Guard will conduct 109 search and rescue cases, save 10 lives, and assist 192 people in distress, protect over $2 million in property, seize 169 pounds of marijuana and 306 pounds of cocaine. The Coast Guard is a very intriguing branch in that even in peacetime, you're awfully busy, right?
Yes, tremendously busy. And the Coast Guard men and women are really first responders, protecting America's, not only our economy, but our national and border security. And we've been, on the wartime side, we've been involved with every war that our nation has fought, sending our cutters and men and women over. And all of that for a force that's active duty size of the New York Police Department. And then we have reserves numbering close to 8,000. And then volunteers. Anyone can volunteer in the Coast Guard Auxiliary, about 30,000. And then, of course, our treasured civilian workforce that work with the military personnel in all sorts of fields and missions like vessel traffic service and developing policy and really the core of our existence, I think.
Martha, we broadcast in communities that have a big Air Force presence, and I also want to clarify something for our listeners, because your story reminds me of another fellow who was a former submarine commander and retired at the rank of captain in the Navy, but he would visit the local Air Force base and get to talking, and people said, "Man, you spent 30 years and you only made captain." So in the Coast Guard, captain is the equivalent of a colonel rank in the Army, Marines, and Air Force, correct?
Yes, okay. 06. So one level below admiral.
Okay, there we go. So you reached captain. That's pretty darn good. Martha, as part of looking at your bio, you saw some interesting deployments. One was you were deployed during Deepwater Horizon spill. Tell us about that, if you would.
Yes, I was actually working in Washington, D.C. on an active duty assignment as the Commandant's press secretary. And my bookends of that assignment, it actually started in early January with the Haiti earthquake of 2010 and then wrapped up with the Deepwater Horizon in the spring of that year. And it was quite a high-paced, high-intensity assignment, not only dealing with large national events and global events like that, but also learning about the different networks and connections between, you know, departments like Department of State, Department of Homeland Security, the White House, the politics involved, and then making sure that everyone knew that the Coast Guard was what the Coast Guard was doing to make a difference.
Martha, was that oil platform, was that in international waters, or was that still within our maritime zone?
It was 60 miles off the coast of Louisiana, and it was a platform that for, I think it was months, that was leaking oil. And the responsible party joined the Unified Command, so So there were a lot of really smart people, not only from the BP side, but industry, state and local officials, Coast Guard, and other agencies working together to figure out a way to stop the oil from spilling. And ultimately, it was capped, the site where it was drilled and was leaking. And certainly the aftermath of all that, the cleanup, the mitigation of the oil in the water, was all part of a unified response.
Okay. Martha, I read somewhere, I think I saw an interview or heard an interview where you describe yourself as you said you feel compelled to be a storyteller. So let's tell some stories. Our listeners love that. What is the creed of the Coast Guard rescue swimmers?
Their motto is "So others may live," and I was blessed to be trusted by this group of amazing, close-knit, mostly men. There have only been 7 women rescue swimmers who trusted me to tell their stories at a moment in their life where they nearly died trying to save a stranger. And so I was able to write a book, having gained the support from the first rescue swimmer, if you will, a story that I came across and heard of and was shocked by it and thought, if I didn't know that our Coast Guard men and women do these kinds of things, then certainly America doesn't know. And this was long before America was put on the map. I'd like to say, and a lot of my colleagues agree, that America didn't really know about the Coast Guard in this modern era until Katrina. And so by gaining the trust of Tristan Heaton, who is Chapter 5 of my book called So Others May Live, Coast Guard Rescue Swimmers Saving Lives Defying Death, I was able to enter into that that group of close-knit heroes who are very humble, who weren't willing to tell their stories, and slowly but surely gained their trust and developed a book which tells the stories of their rescues, the ones that they think are legendary, happening in diverse environments, not only the ocean, but during hurricanes and on oil rigs that exploded, in caves, sinking vessels, floods, even Niagara Falls. And it's quite the adventure to sit down and read or listen to this book. It's now an audio book, too.
Martha, you got ahead of me because I was going to suggest what a great title for a book, but you beat me to the punch there on that one. So That Others May Live, your first book?
Yes, and I learned a lot writing a book. I had no idea what I was doing. It took me a while, but I figured it out, and I'm so thankful that I was honored with the folks trusting me to tell their stories and blessed that I was able to stick with it and publish it. And it's still going strong.
Tell us some stories from that book. You the first woman rescue swimmer. Who was that?
Kelly Moak was the first woman rescue swimmer, and she ended up becoming a helicopter pilot in the Coast Guard, and so she flew on missions, too. And she rescued a fighter pilot who crashed in the Pacific Ocean and was tangled in his parachute, and so she descended from the helicopter into the water and worked to detangle him while also making sure that he kept his nose and mouth above the water so that he could breathe, and she had to cut some of the lines, make sure she cut the right lines to release him from this web of tangled lines, and so she saved his life. And another story that happened in the Pacific, which I think is just crazy, is how often do you hear of a helicopter flying into a cave, an ocean cave along the Oregon coast, to save not only the rescue swimmer, but the victim survivor that was trapped inside. And the story that Tristan Heaton tells of trying to swim through these washing machines, like multiple washing machines on a spin cycle because of the dynamics of the water hydraulics, he couldn't get out. He had to nearly die, drown, holding his breath and holding the other person, the survivor that he had in his arms, helping pull him out. And they did nearly drown, and it's just phenomenal. And then they almost gave up hope. Somehow they broke through that barrier of water after many attempts and saw USCG on the bottom of the helicopter because his team, they were not going to leave him. The aviators, the pilots, and flight mech inside the helicopter decided our only way to get Tristan back is to fly in close enough to deliver the basket, the rescue basket, through a on a tagline and use the current to bring it to him. And then even after that, they couldn't take Tristan up with the survivor at the same time because the survivor was so heavy. So he hung on as the survivor was in the basket, and they pulled him out, and he, you know, had the breath knocked out of him and all sorts of crazy things. It's like, isn't that enough? Hasn't he been punished enough for doing a good deed? And so he survived. And actually, this story in my book were the template for the people that made the movie The Guardian. And unfortunately, I didn't get credit for it, as you won't see them saying it's a book by Martha LaGuardia based on. But Kevin Costner's character is Tristan Heaton in Chapter 5 of my book called So Others May Live.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. I enjoyed that film, but also because I talk to people like you, Martha, and I understand that it's just a film and it's not, you know, completely accurate. One thing that I wonder about, you know, we'd all like to think that every rescue is going to be successful, but it's not. How do the swimmers and the crews deal with that, Martha? Does the Coast Guard have any special programs for, you know, because that's going to be awful tough to be highly trained and make every effort and just not be able to save that life.
Right. And yes, the Coast Guard has a lot of programs, and we've evolved and grown in that world of post-traumatic stress syndrome and recovery and dealing with the aftermath. And initially, I think the military didn't recognize PTSD and its military personnel, but the Coast Guard knew it needed to take care of its people. And to keep them in the service, there needed to be a way to overcome and heal from the experiences. So now we certainly have been, over the last few decades, a lot better at it than we were before that. Tristan, unfortunately, had to leave the Coast Guard to get help through the Veterans Affairs system and heal himself from the things he saw, he smelt, he heard, he did, because they could become quite nightmarish. And the wonderful thing about Tristan is he now has a career in helping others who are dealing with PTSD, and he gives them the book, So Others May Live, because it's his chapter, and he says, read this. I can relate to you. I understand where you are. And it's about connecting, right? Mm-hmm. It's about connecting people and helping people understand how they have a purpose and a place, and they can overcome things that are going on that are tragic and help them recover.
Martha, when we come back, I like that word, the phrase can overcome, and I'm going to give folks a quote of yours. I believe women deserve to be more than a footnote in Oliver North's book. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Martha LaGuardia Cotite, Captain, United States Coast Guard retired. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Martha LaGuardia Cotite. Martha spent 29 years in the U.S. Coast Guard, retiring at the rank of captain. She's also a prolific, I don't know if prolific, but she's an award-winning writer, Martha. How about we settle on that? As I understand it, you've got six?
I have 5 books published, and I'm working on a novel, but I can't disclose what that's about right now.
Oh, we're going to have to put you in the secret bunker, Martha, but okay.
Yes.
So every show, Ben gets a really dumb question, so here's my dumb question as a rather awkward introduction to your next book. There's been a lot of discussion. I've had guests on. We talk about the rules of engagement in our current conflicts and whether those are actually good or bad or causing people, causing safety issues for our own troops. My question is, what are the rules of engagement for the Coast Guard when you're out there in the ocean in the Caribbean and you've got a drug smuggler? What do you have to get permission before you fire on that ship, or are all bets off at that point in time?
Oh, yes, certainly. There are rules of engagement. There's laws and policies that we have to follow, and procedures, and they work. So before a warning shot, before a shot that could kill someone is ever fired, and I don't know that we necessarily have to do that frequently at all, there's certainly warning shots. And then back out from that, what can you do before the warning shot? So this whole sequence of events, courses of actions, and rules that are required before any kind of engagement like that. So you don't escalate to the death before you try a number of different options. But rules of engagement for me in terms of my book, and I don't want to steal your thunder, did you want to introduce it?
It was going to be an awkward introduction anyway, but yes. Tell us about your other book, Changing the Rules of Engagement, Martha.
So the title, Changing the Rules of Engagement, is it's a book that I wrote, a collection of stories about leadership and brave, courageous women. And I was inspired to write this book, not only because there weren't many books out there celebrating women in the military, and I thought the word should get out, people should understand why we serve, and these amazing women that have done so many amazing things, like becoming the first first Thunderbird pilot, one of only three women to become an astronaut and command the space shuttle in the history of the space shuttle program, the first female four-star general, and women who are drill instructors in the United States Marine Corps. So I feature officers and enlisted that have helped change the culture of their service to achieve their goals and, in some cases, their bigger dreams. So that's what the book is about.
So before the break, I mentioned I saw an interview where you said women deserve to be more than a footnote in Oliver North's book. I don't get the connection. Explain that one to me.
Well, basically, he really pissed me off when I was doing research, and I discovered that in all of his books at the time when I was researching for my book about women, my book was published in 2012, and it just came out as an audio book this month. So we're talking current time, not that long ago. His books, when he talked about women, they were only in the footnotes, and basically summarizing that they served and this number did this, and not even the detail or the recognition of a chapter profiling a woman, just like he did the men that have served. So I figured I would set things straight as best I could, and hopefully he reads my book.
I'm sure he's listening right now. Maybe he will. One of the women featured in your book is Vice Admiral Vivian Crea. She's quite the special story. Tell us more about her, if you would, Martha.
Oh, Vice Admiral Vivian Crea is an amazing leader, aviator, and so well regarded and respected across the services and in public life. And I'll just call her a public figure because even to this day, she is the only woman who has achieved this rank, this position, as second in command of a military force. So she served as Vice Commandant of the United States Coast Guard. And I had the honor of interviewing her while she was Vice Commandant. And not only did she have this, you know, history of amazing work that she did as an aviator and leader, but now Vice Commandant. So, of course, I was nervous walking into her office. And I sat down, or she invited me to sit down. And she didn't take a seat behind the desk. She took a chair next to the couch where I was sitting, so we were next to each other. There wasn't a barrier between us. And one of the first things she asked that I'll never forget was, Martha, what is it that you need from me today so that you leave here successful and that I've helped you achieve what your goal is? And that is just such a wonderful way for a leader to start off any conversation or any event, whether it's a crisis or not, is to look at the other person's point of view and find out how you can help them achieve what they are trying to do.
Well, one of the things I also saw is that each of the women that you feature in the book, Martha, offers a lesson that has crossed over for you or could cross over for the rest of us in the civilian and the business world. What are some of those lessons, and what are some of the traits of these leaders that you have found or during your research that you believe transfer well to the civilian world?
Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate you noticing that. And that is the goal of the book, is to make it relatable to people, men and women, who aren't in the military or who are in the military. And each woman has changed my life, and I hope that those who listen to the book or read the book will also be changed by it in some way, small or large, in that, for example, Secretary Heather Wilson, who was Secretary of the Air Force, she was a congresswoman, now she's the president of a university in Texas. Her takeaway for me was, dream your bigger dream. So we all maybe start out with a dream and we set a way to get there, But imagine if you had a bigger dream, what would that be? And what steps would you take to get there? So it's like aiming a little higher and believing in yourself. And when you talk about believing in yourself, Nicole Malkowski, who was the first female Thunderbird pilot, her takeaway for me was the key to success. When I asked her about that, she flew the aerial demonstration Thunderbird F-16. She was the first woman to do that. So she faced a lot of cultural backlash for being a woman that wanted to do it. It was her dream since she was a child. And then when she agreed to do it, she was still getting a lot of negative reviews in the press. But her key to success in life and in that particular situation was surrounding herself with a team of supporters, people that believed in her. And she kept that team. And she ignored those who weren't supporters in sense of she left them alone. They weren't part of her core team. And she never acted out in anger towards them because they didn't support her. And I think that's important, healthy way of living, not only having a sound mind, body, but also spirit. What do you think?
Martha, it brings me back to, because words come to mind, perseverance, and I believe in the case of Vice Admiral Cray, just not taking no for an answer.
That's a very good point. I'm glad you brought that up. That was a key part of her story also in her earlier career days. She wanted to be an aviator. Well, the law and the policy at that time was that women could not fly in aircraft, and so she... In the Coast Guard, we didn't have to abide by Department of Defense, so there was a little more leverage there. So the policy could change for the Coast Guard. So she appealed to whoever the powers that be and said, why is it that I can't do this? She didn't take no for an answer. She said, look, I can, I don't need a special berth like on a ship. You need separate berthing area. I can fly the plane. I can do all these things just like a man can. What is your reasoning? So they couldn't find a substantial reason to say no. And ultimately, because of her persistence and not taking no for an answer, but following up with a persuasive argument, not a pushy type of argument that made sense, there was no reason not to allow women to fly.
Martha, it's interesting. Over the course of my career, I found some of the most exceptional leaders don't ask the question why as much as they ask why not.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? You can't do this. We can't achieve this. Why not? What can I move out of your way, or what door can I kick in so that you can do that? Going back to your time on the cutter, Captain, was that? I mean, this is before you wrote the book, obviously, but did you find that to be an issue? With the all male crew following orders, or the chain of command stood strong in that case?
No, there was not that I recall any issue of following orders. I think it was more of learning about each other and respecting each other as people and adapting a leadership style to fit the needs of the person or the situation. And I laugh about it when I think about it. My second command was a patrol boat where I was the executive officer with a crew of 16 men and the only woman and the first woman on board. And one of my bosun's mates, I had red hair. So red hair is always, in my mind, the person that's got great personality, right? Like a little bit fiery, and he's from the South. And so sometimes the Southern people may be a little chauvinistic. But to this day, we're in contact on Instagram, and Boats was giving me a little bit of a rough time, but only in one sense I could have taken it as, oh, he's not wanting to do what I'm asking. But in reality, it was more of a testing of, hey, we can get along, we can develop this camaraderie as a team. And we did. And that was the beauty of that assignment, was being on a crew with 16 men, being the only woman, was showing each other how we worked well together. We had each other's back in the most dangerous of situations, boarding a boat that was potentially running drugs, or mm-hmm. A controlled delivery kind of situation. And we had weapons on. And, I was nervous about having a gun on my hip, but I could trust the team of guys that surrounded me that they were going to protect me and I was going to do my job to the best of my ability so that they could do their job too. And it was such a beautiful, rewarding experience in a highly volatile situation. And we came through it with 5 stars.
And Martha, again, for our listeners that aren't familiar with Navy and Coast Guard, XO, in effect, you are the second in command aboard that vessel.
Yes, that's
okay.
Right.
All right. When we come back, I'd like to continue this discussion. And Martha, I want to touch a little bit on the lessons you've learned. You've built a very successful speaking career. You speak a lot to groups and companies. And I want to talk about some of those leadership lessons and what can be applied, particularly in, I think you used the phrase, in calm seas or not so calm seas. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. You can find out more. Visit MarthaKotite.com, KOTITE. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, we're very pleased to be joined by Captain Martha LaGuardia Kotite. She is a 29-year veteran of the U.S. Coast Guard, now a very award-winning author and a very successful speaker. You can find some of her TED Talks on the interwebs. You can also visit MarthaKotite.com. That Kotite is spelled KOTITE.com. Martha, leadership is something I'm guessing you are often asked to speak about, particularly in the corporate world and organizational world. And the phrase I couldn't get right before the break, I've got it now in front of me, leading your crew through calm and turbulent seas. What are some of those lessons? And I'm just thinking in context of our current situation, the avoiding paralysis or the other side of that coin, which can be just as dangerous, the do something, anything, damn it, sort of a response.
Well, yes, it's very tragic and alarming situation that we're dealing with globally with the coronavirus. And let me just say, my heart and prayers are out to those, anyone affected by it or their families. And I know I've got family and friends and peers and colleagues in New York and Los Angeles, which appear right now to be the really hot spots of this epidemic. And I want to say to them, you will be okay. We will get through this together. And Americans are problem solvers, and that's all about leadership in terms of a crisis. In some ways, it requires us to be extra sensitive to the situation we're all in and the teams that you manage. So I know a lot of people are working from home. Kids are out of school, like my son. He's having to work on online now to finish his high school, and his graduation's canceled. His senior prom is canceled. So we're all dealing with things that are not our normal routine. And I think checking in with your team, with individuals, with your family, and finding out how are they doing, being someone that has compassion and an empathetic leader is so important right now, and someone that has candor, who's honest and truthful, not only about how they're feeling, how you're doing, maybe you're overwhelmed and need some help. Leadership is also especially important in a crisis to not only be honest and empathetic, but to be accountable and to find out, what style works for the people that you're working with. For example, do they need delegation? Are they confused? Do they need to be told how to do it or what to do? Or is it best for you to follow, lead by following, and just get out of the way and let some amazing people who are quite intelligent and maybe experts in the situation at hand, let them go ahead and make a difference. So there's a lot of different things that go into leadership, but I think for this particular time, those are key. And if we have time, I'd like to go over what I think are some rules of engagement that will help.
Absolutely. Please do. I think about your career in the Coast Guard, that the phrase so often used, we're all in the same boat. In your case, that was literal.
Yes. we are, especially in this global crisis, all in the same boat, and I know we'll get through it. I've worked many disasters that some were on the national level, some were on the international level, and there are so many smart people out there working very hard behind the scenes, and we're not seeing that. We're not seeing some of the places where I worked, where I know they are doing the best they can. They're exhausted, probably. Hopefully they're getting breaks. Hopefully they're getting food. And hopefully they're knowing that they are appreciated for all the hard work that is being done to make a difference and to save lives. And we will find that solution. And so for those of us that aren't on the front lines, if you will, or if you choose to use this for that, I've found that it's important to have your own rules of engagement. And something I like to use now, from my experiences, is these three rules, and I can explain them a little bit. Be bold, be first, and be you. And what I mean about be bold is being that bold leader, that empathetic leader who asks, what is it that I can do for you? What do you need from me? It's that leader that recognizes they should delegate or get out of the way. And being first, some people have said, well, there's no more first left. There's already the first female astronaut. There's already the first this. Well, just look at this crisis with the coronavirus. There's plenty of firsts happening right now. There's people that are creative, they're thinking, and their leaders are supporting the original thought, outside-of-the-box thought, to make these solutions happen and to save lives. So there's plenty of firsts left, and on another flip of that coin would be the first to walk across the street to the elderly neighbor and say, within 6 feet, social distancing, what do you need? Do you need a meal? Do you need toilet paper? All these things on the smallest of levels make a difference for our community and for our nation and for our world. And the last one, be bold, be first, be you. Be you is so important that you're authentic to who you are. Not only what you want to do so that you find that joy in your life, what you're capable of doing, and making sure that you're following what your goals are and don't give up on them. And especially those who may feel depressed or overwhelmed in their lives, maybe if you were more authentic to who you are, you would find that team of supporters, you would move in that direction that is best for you. And by all means, I do have a background in dealing with suicide. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I lost my brother to suicide. And I want to say it's so important for anyone feeling like they don't see the light, that they're in darkness, that you are not alone. You have a purpose and a place in this life, and you are so important. And as I have witnessed and lived through in my own life the loss of my brother, it's devastating, the tragedy that is left behind by someone who chooses to take their life. It's such a darkness, such a gap, and it changes so many lives that were connected to the person that decided to leave. It's more tragedy and hardship than anyone can imagine, because they're unfortunately not thinking about what they leave behind when they decide to take their life. So be bold, be first, be you, and believe in yourself. And your purpose and your place, and you will find the light, and ask for help if you need the help to do it.
Martha, we've only got about a minute and a half left, but one thing that made me think of as you were talking, one of my favorite book quotes comes from the novel Dune, and that is, fear is the mind killer. What is your experience so often that people, that freezes them into inaction, and they're not being bold or being first or being themselves even?
Right. We all feel a sense of fear for especially something that's outside our comfort zone, or something as silly. For me, I am definitely afraid of heights, and I tried zip lining last summer in Alaska, and I was the only one screaming my head off, so afraid to jump off the platform, and there were older people behind me like, come on, lady, let's just go. So, and that's kind of a silly kind of thing to be fearful of, but I think I'm trying to share that, yes, even I feel fear. We all do, and it's a matter of breaking it down to what is it really that you fear? How is it that you can work through this? Do you need someone to give you encouragement? Do you need a different kind of step, or do you need knowledge? And if knowledge can help you overcome it, because that helps you face the reality of it, maybe it's not something to be fearful of. So by all means, I think being bold, being first, and being you, and outlining the path that you want to follow that's authentic to who you are. There will be situations along the way, but I do believe that everyone has a purpose and a place, and if you can cultivate that team of people that support you and think positively, that's the other thing I should say, is stay positive, stay fit, try to be physically fit and healthy in the choices that you make.
And Martha, I tell you, we've run out of time, but thank you so much for spending an hour with us here. Folks can find out more, MarthaKotite.com, KOTITE.com. And Martha, please give me a call. Let me know when your Coast Guard friends intercept their first load of smuggled toilet paper. Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast and others can be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, on Twitter at Warrior Radio TUC. Please share these messages and give us continued support. Until next time, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.